Hi, and welcome to another episode brought to you by Brian Spain Domain, where we share stories about history and Spanish culture and so on, and like to cover a little bit of everything. Today we are going to talk about a subject I mentioned in the previous podcast, which was about the reign of Carlos III, one of the most famous monarchs in Spanish history. He reigned during the second half of the 18th century. And he, along with his brother, Fernando VI, who reigned before him, made up what many people considered to be Spain's version of the Enlightenment and the enlightened despot. When we talk about the Enlightenment and rulers, we'll often talk about Frederick or Catherine the Great and Joseph, and so on. Not many people will mention Fernando VI or Carlos III, and yet there was a pretty solid enlightened movement in Spain at this time, and there were some pretty good reasons for this. And that's because Spain, which had been a major empire and one of the first superpowers during the 16th century and about halfway through the 17th century, had begun to decline. And then the Habsburg dynasty left at the beginning of the 18th century. And then the Bourbon dynasty moved in, and it's still the dynasty of the royal family to this day. The Bourbons were French, and France in many ways was more advanced than Spain in terms of being a modern society, although that was still a bit relative back then. But it was a little more modern, and these kings wanted to apply some of these reforms to Spain to turn it around. I'm not sure if they were going to be able to bring it back to its former days of glory, but they wanted to modernize society somewhat, with mixed results, modernize infrastructure, modernize the economy, and even the military. So there were a lot of projects going on. I think I'll tell you about another one in the next podcast, and then I'll move on to other subjects. But there's a lot there. I think it's one of those periods in Spanish history that don't get the attention that they deserve, and yet there's so much going on there. And Carlos III was especially famous for his role in Madrid. You can see his legacy in terms of buildings and monuments all over the place. But anyway, getting back to our subject of the day, today I'm going to talk about a project known as the Nuevas Poblaciones, which is sort of best translated as the New Settlements. And these are towns that are found in the north of Andalusia, in the province, mainly the province of Jaén, towns that were founded in the 18th century, which is relatively recent. When you compare some of the towns to the north of Spain, which would go back 1,000 or even 2,000 years. Many of these names are familiar to the traveler. If you go from Madrid down south to Andalusia, nowadays there are two major highways. It takes you sort of southwest and then straight south through Extremadura. But the traditional highway is the highway that is called the A4. And it goes pretty much due south along the La Mancha, which is that open plain. And at the very end, as it goes into Andalusia, you have to traverse this mountainous terrain known as Despeñaperros, which translates as something like dogs being hurled from, I guess, a high point. Sounds dramatic and violent, but the actual name has nothing to do with a dog. But it sounds appropriate when you're going through that area because it's pretty rough terrain. Nowadays, the highway is much better. I can personally attest for this, that in this century, the old highway before they redid it was so curvy and windy in that area that a four-lane highway. You would have to go around certain curves at about 50 kilometers per hour, which is like 30 miles per hour. So it was pretty crazy. It was not an easy drive in that area. Since then, they've built tunnels and improved the highway, so it's a different story. But you still have to go through this mountainous area. And then when you get through that, you start getting to the north of Hainan, and you see miles and miles and miles of olive trees. You start coming across in names of towns. One of the first ones is called La Carolina, like Carolina. Interesting, I'll mention that because Carolina is not like the name Caroline. It comes from Carolus, which is the Latin name for King Carlos III, which is the same source of the name in the United States, North Carolina and South Carolina. That Carolina actually is in reference to King Charles of England for the same reason. But anyway, as I say, what makes these towns interesting is that they were founded in the 19th, no, excuse me, in the 18th century as part of a plan to repopulate certain parts of Spain, which were underpopulated. And what the government was trying to do was increase agricultural production in areas where no one was living by putting people there and having them live there. And also, they wanted to make that area a little bit safer because traditionally, because there was no one around there, and because you had these mountains, that was ideal for highway robbers and bandits. So they wanted to make that area, the southern part of La Mancha and the northern part of Andalusia, safer for travel. The government of Carlos III introduced this plan in the late 1760s. It sort of reflected the ideals and thinking of the Enlightenment. As I said, it was focused mainly on repopulating sparsely inhabited areas of southern Spain with new agricultural communities. And it's a fascinating little chapter in Spanish history and a classic example of enlightened absolutism that you found in Spain at the time. Anyway, I was telling you that by the mid-18th century, large regions of Spain remained underpopulated and economically underdeveloped, depressed. One especially problematic area was Sierra Morena, which linked Madrid with Seville and Cadiz and so on. But the route was dangerous because bandits frequently attacked travelers and merchants. And the government believed that by increasing the population and agricultural activity, that would make the roads safer, it would stimulate economic production, and also probably strengthen the royal control over the countryside. The project officially began in 1767 under the guidance of a couple of reformers, ministers for the king. One was Pedro Rodríguez de Campomanes, known more famously as Campomanes. And the other main one, really the big impulser behind this, was Pablo de Olavide. Olavide was a Peruvian-born Spaniard who was very influential during Charles III's reign. A writer, intellectual, businessman, interesting man, somewhat controversial. There's a square, a famous plaza in his name in the Chamberí area of Madrid. And that may sound familiar to a number of Americans who have recently moved into that neighborhood. It's become, speaking of colonies, a sort of a recent colony for newly arrived Americans, sort of post-pandemic Americans who have moved into the Olavide section of Madrid near Chamberí. If any of my listeners happen to be living there, now you know where it gets its name. Olavide was appointed superintendent of the new settlements, and he played a central role in organizing the colonies and implementing the king's vision. The crown issued what they call a fuero de las nuevas poblaciones, the new settlements. A fuero, Fuero, is sort of a special charter that regulated administration, economy, and social life. The Fueros is an old tradition that goes back centuries in Spanish history, Spanish culture. We still see examples of it in regions like Navarra, which is known as the, which is a Fuero, because it has a special agreement with the Spanish government. Anyway, one of the interesting things about this charter is that it sort of created a new type of rural society. They wanted to make something that was sort of free of many of the traditional structures that existed in the rest of the towns that have been around for hundreds of years, if not a thousand years. And they considered those structures to be obstacles towards progress, almost like sort of feudal privileges, nobility, aristocracy, the church, excessive concentration of land ownership. And they felt that that was frustrating progress in a lot of the towns in Spain. So they said, well, let's start over. Let's make our own towns, design it the way we want it to be, limit certain things that might be a problem towards progress, and we'll just get people to come to the town. Now, where did they get these people from? And this is one of the interesting things here. The original idea was to bring in thousands of settlers, not from different parts of Spain originally, but from Central Europe, mainly Germany, Switzerland, even Flanders, Catholic families, in theory, looking for a better life. Now, originally, these ideas were for them to get them to sign up for a program that would send them to South America and settle there and develop their lives there. But the government said, no, now that we've got these people, let's send them to the north of Andalusia. Now, the reason why I'm laughing is that there's a very big difference between the two places. And this would have an impact on the success or failure of these ideas. Anyway, several thousand, somewhere at least 6,000, possibly up to 8,000, some say 10,000 colonists from these countries arrived in Spain between 1767 and 1769. And they were sent to an area that had really nothing going for it. And they were going to just start over and build these towns. These settlements were carefully planned according to sort of enlightened, reasoned ideals, instead of sort of the messy old villages that went, you know, irregular all over the place, and no rhyme or reason in their design. These were well-designed, well-organized street grids, central plazas, churches. It had administrative buildings. Everything was designed for a new group of settlers to come in and live in. The government hoped these communities would become models of productivity, sort of discipline, and rational social organization. Isn't this amazing? The property given out were supposed to be the same for everyone, equality. It almost has communist aspects to it. It was to prevent different social classes. Even you were supposed to have your church. That was a given. In fact, the people they want to come in were supposed to be Catholic, but no religious community could be formed. In other words, you couldn't build and create a monastery or a convent or anything of that. That was illegal. And the reformers believed that they would encourage agricultural efficiency and create a stable rural middle class. They want to provide homes and communities. And also the crown wanted to strengthen its presence in those areas. Economically, the policy aimed to improve agriculture, livestock production, local industry and trade. Now, despite the ambitious goals, the policy faced difficulties. Many settlers struggled with the harsh conditions, especially the unfamiliar climates, disease, and poor infrastructure. You know, the towns took a while to build. The climate was a major factor. I mean, the summers there are horrifically hot. So if you lived in the north or central Europe, it would be a major shock to deal with some of the hottest parts of Spain every summer. in those areas. And I can attest to that. Many of the foreigners died their first year or two, and some returned and gave up, disappointed with what they found. So the population of foreign settlers declined. It was replaced by Spaniards, but the Spaniards had to be from different parts of Spain. They couldn't be like next door. It had to be far away. The Basque Country, Catalonia, Valencia, those were the people who could actually come in and settle. Olavide did make a fairly earnest effort, attempt to get people on board and to get these towns working. It was very ambitious. It's not something you could just whip together in a couple of years. He received a lot of criticism, but he was a very practical man and did what he could to provide the practicality that these places needed. On the other hand, the towns were founded and still exist, and some are quite big. We are talking about places like La Carolina, La Carlota, La Luisiana, Guaroman, Santa Elena. All these towns still exist, and some of them are quite big, you know, 10, 15,000 people, which is sizable for that part of the country. And if you go there, you can actually see the original grid design of the towns, which in no way resembled what you would find in the older places. So it's sort of cool to see this this period of design, this of reform, an attempt to come up with a town with a lot of thinking and design behind it, not just settling for the sake of settling. They had a whole plan in mind. The agricultural part did okay. It wasn't great. The climate was difficult. The land wasn't the most ideal for a lot of types of agriculture, which probably is why, for example, Jaén today is mostly just one enormous olive grove. I mean, it's the entire province is just one giant olive grove. It's incredible. Olive trees will grow well there. They don't need as much attention as crops like cereals and stuff like that. And that probably contributed to that conversion. But these towns exist. You can go see them. You can take a look at what was behind this this reform. And it's pretty cool. It's an interesting place. This would not be the last time this is done. In the 20th century, during the Franco period, a whole another set of towns would be founded in sort of a similar fashion, with a similar setup, town blocks, you know, grid design, everything thought out to once again repopulate the countryside. Many of those towns, which were smaller, have suffered from falling population and are a shadow of what they used to be. So in a certain way, the new settlements were successful. And you can go to those towns and you discover that there's a fairly sizable percentage of the population which is originally from there with German last names, or maybe Spanish versions of German last names, which are vestiges of that original project. And apparently there are even a few traditions that have been carried on since then. Like, for example, at Easter time, they paint Easter eggs. They boil them and paint Easter eggs, which is a tradition you find in many parts of Northern Europe and the United States. But in many parts of Spain, that doesn't exist. But apparently in this area, they still do that. And that is because of the tradition being taken there from the days when the first settlers were German. And anyway, I thought that's an interesting story. I hope you felt the same way. That will be all for today's podcast, brought to you by Bride Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us any comments, because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. And you can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button, Or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. And you can also check us out at our YouTube channel and support us by subscribing. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.